Okay. So there's a lot of water under the bridge by the time we get to Dugan Navigayo. Dugan's meteoric rise, as described in Sefer Shmuel, Divrei Hayamim just starts with Dugan as king already. Right? When you're introduced to Dugan in Divrei Hayamim, Perek Yud, Shaul's just about to kill himself. Right? That shows you already that Divrei Hayamim's agenda is really more on Dugan and his descendants than on Shaul. In fact, in Divrei Hayamim, you have very few stories about the kings of Yisrael. Most of the stories are about the kings of Yehuda. Okay? But Tehillim does give us a pretty good glimpse of David's personal life, his personal experiences. Just to tell you, chapter 17, chapter 32, chapter 51 through 60, and many in between, chapter 34, there are lots of personal stories that it behooves one who really wants to get the most out of Sefer Shmuel. You should know Megillas Rus also, of course. That currently saved it to David's life. Okay, now let me tell you, if you're all listening here, your grade at the end of this semester will be determined by your class attendance, participation, you know that, these assignments. And we're going to have two additional determinants for the grade. One will be a paper, something that's of interest at Sefer Shmuel, which I hope we can establish, we do at the end of the semester, establish before, maybe right after Purim, what topics you'd like to do. Okay? It can be very loosely connected to many events in Sefer Shmuel. Each one would have their own unique topic, as well as a bekiut test in Sefer Shmuel. That bekiut will not be asking you for a particular adox or mitzvahs, davids, or things like that, but it will be on knowing the knowledge and information of Sefer Shmuel. Okay? I suspect all of you would do well on that part, even if I gave it to you right now. Okay? Amen. But I would like, just if we're going to learn Shmuel together, you should have some knowledge of Zikiyut. It's something you can pick up very quickly. And I have not purposely neglected, but we haven't been in the polemic aspect. Remember, the word polemic is in the title of your course, and it's that the book that I gave you that has not shown up too much. This point of Shmuel Aleph, but it shows up a lot more in Shmuel Bet. So we'll be moving in that direction more at that point. Okay? Good? Okay. David, yes?
Does the Kiyah test in Shmuel Aleph only, or Shmuel Aleph and?
Both. Yes. So it'll be towards the end of the opening, lots of time for it. I think I'm supposed to schedule it, make sure it doesn't interfere with your. It's not going to be a big thing like you're going, this is, it's very easy to, it's an identifiable amount, it's a clear. But it's just. And it's in Hebrew. Okay. Same. Okay, so David gets the hint that he's not in good graces with the king, probably very early on. He's supposed to marry Merab for killing Goliath, and the king weasels out of that and gives Merab to a man named... No, that's Michal.
Oh, sorry.
Adriel Hamachumati. The king somehow learns that this is kind of thing the Chabad Leibowitz likes to point out. There's only one person in the whole Tanakh where we're told a woman loved a man. That is. Only one woman in Tanakh loves a man. Now, I'm sure Sarah loved Avram, and I'm sure Tzipora loved Moshe, and I'm sure that by the actions of certain people, they loved their spouses. But we're only told regarding one woman who loved a man. That woman is, in other words, if you would look up the word Vate'ehav, appears once. Unless it's talking about a woman loving a cut of meat or something like that, but it doesn't appear. Okay, the answer is, well, why am I telling it to you now?
Michal.
Yes, Michal loves David. And Shaul can already see that his son is very enamored of David. Right? The best of besties, right? So, Shaul's, at first, he's like, you know, you've made a deal. What's going to happen the next time you guarantee a man who kills a giant that you're going to give him? You're not giving him what you promised. So Shaul, the all-knowing narrators, knows what Shaul was thinking. And he says that, Shaul says, let me use this as an opportunity to have him killed. So the reader already knows that Shaul has it out for him. But why? This is a valued soldier, yet paranoia knows no friends. He wants him dead because he thinks he's taking over. Did he get a word that he's from Shevet Yehuda, I'm Shevet Binyamin. He's very popular, especially with the dancing girls. I know God has left me. Shmuel told me twice already. Would you agree that Shaul's objective for the rest of his life is going to be, I want to assure that my son is going to be the next king, not David, not my son-in-law. Well, he's not a son-in-law yet. But he uses Michal, it's a really despicable thing. He uses Michal as a vehicle. He says he found out that his daughter loved him and he said, this is how I'll get him. I'll tell him you can marry my second daughter if you fight a battle and slay 100 Philistines. There's a side issue involved there of getting their foreskins. You remember that? That's not. Let's just call it slay 100 Philistines. And he said, surely he won't be able to do this and he'll die this way. This is where I get rid of him. To use your daughter that way, who you know is already in love with him, right? And you know your son is very much his dear friend. Right, but you know, God has left Shaul and God is shining on David. Not only does he slay 100, he slays 200 Philistines. This time, Shaul does give over the woman. David is his trusted son-in-law. And living in the palace. Who knows, every day Shaul looks at David with contempt and seeing how successful he is, how popular he is, how my family is enamored of him. Every one of these things grates on this poor Shaul. Was losing his mind slowly. Now remember that David was brought in before he killed Goliath to play harp for a disturbed Shaul. So the text says one day as Shaul is listening to David playing harp, he's holding his spear in his hand. David is sitting, a sitting target in the same room. Shaul is holding his spear and he says, I got it. Akenu across my spear, like this, and I'll pretend that I was just like practicing. I was like, oh, God, I'm sorry. Oh, what did I do? And it'd be too late. I'll hit him right through his head into the wall. And he missed twice. Do you remember the aim of Binyamin at the end of Shelf 2? Remember it says that they were adept at shooting at things with both hands, and that they could aim at a hair at any distance and never miss. Now that sounds like, I didn't make that up, it's exact quote in English. They would never miss at any distance. It's just an exaggeration that they have great aim. They're trained. Why are Binyamin lefties? Let me hear Bina Chassid says he's called Binyamin. Binyamin used his right hand to help Yaakov, who was limping. Right? So because Binyamin was always using his right hand for his father, his left hand was there for to be trained to train himself. You know, just born lefties, but said to such an extent. Although it is hereditary, but you can't have a whole tribe of lefties. They train themselves to use both hands. And Shaul, by seeing that he missed twice at a sitting target with a spear at close range, it says Shaul knew that this had... Now, a contrite spirit would have said, okay, I'll make my peace with it. Whatever God has in store, whether it's my son who's going to be the next king or him who's going to be the next king, I accept it. But that's not what happened to Shaul. He became so insanely jealous of David. He again tried to kill him. See, at least this time, it was like the midwives in the beginning of Shmos, where we want to kill the Jewish babies, but we want to make it look like it's an accident. So Shaul says, let me kill him, and I'll make it look like it's an accident. Do kings in Israel think that they can get away with that? Well, if no one else is in the room, it's my word against, well, it's not even his, he's dead. So people will accept that. He probably convinces himself. Even wicked Queen Jezebel realizes, I can't just go over to Naboth to take his vineyard. I have to come up with something up he did, a false testimony about him, about to get his vineyard. Yes.
So that's very long for Shaul, because like you highlight where he like didn't kill all like the animals because like the people wanted to use. Always like prioritize listening to the people over like worrying about Hashem.
And remember how he behaved with the Kohanim. That's the story coming up. Mm-hmm. It says mm-hmm. Exactly what the text tells him to do to Amalek. He did to those Kohanim. To make a message for anyone else who dares help this guy who's a fugitive or a king. So then it becomes, like open season. He informs his wife that I want him. And she says, give him some time. He's sick in bed. Just let him sleep till the morning. And she made she let him out the window. She took the low road because when Shaul says to her, why did you let my enemy go? Don't you know he's my enemy? And she takes the low road because she says something, remember? He said he threatened to kill me if I didn't help him. David never said that to Michal. But she was too weak to stand up to her father the way her brother did in the next story, which is at the Rosh Chodesh festival. The first day, Shaul accepted the excuse. He didn't even ask for an excuse. He just said, okay, David's not here. Okay, he must have, maybe he wasn't tall. But when he missed the second day, and Yonatan, and then he said, yo, where is Ben Yishai? And he said, he had a zevach mishpacha, he had a family thing, he begged you for some time off. And Shaul went crazy. That's where he went public. Yonatan had to tell David, it's the Haftarah of Machah Chodesh, you all know this, right? And David from then on in the future. The next story, he gets help from the Kohanim. Shaul makes a good message of that. What's going to happen if you get help from And David knew that he would be putting into grave danger any Jewish city that would help him. That was off the table now. So where did he go? He went to the Plishtim. That didn't go well either. Right? Why would you go to the Plishtim, the place where you killed their giant? According to the simple pshat of some psukim at the end of Devar Yamim Aleph, that giant was the brother of the current king, Achish. He doesn't want any part of David. Right? What was David's plan? To make them think I'm someone else. I have to live somewhere. At that time, David started to gather some men who were also in desperate straits. So, let's recap. The palace is off. Any city in Israel, I can't go to because I'll put them in danger. Right? Plishtim, no good. Where does he go next? Moab. He takes his entire family to Moab. Why his entire family? The same reason that superheroes are not supposed to have friends. You ever hear why?
The first target.
Because they'll be the target. Lex Luthor is going to take Jimmy Olsen captive and say, okay, I'm going to rip him apart limb by limb until you give me what I want, Superman. You know what I'm saying? That's one of the famous things about, you know, superheroes. You're supposed to be incognito. No one's supposed to know you're in a circle because you're not allowed to have an inner circle. David has an inner circle. He's afraid that Shaul is going to take my siblings one by one and kill them if I don't give myself up. So he takes them all along. Okay. That fact is going to come up again. Everything I've told you now is just a narrative. Right? I'm building up to chapter 25. In Shmuel Bet, David is extremely cruel to Moabites. His mom's war crimes, what he does to Moab. It's war crimes which Shaul did to Amalek. But what David did to Shaul, just even in the ancient world, was not done. He killed captives. You didn't kill captives, you exchanged captives. Right? So, you know, when someone surrenders to you, you're not supposed to kill them. Right? So, Rashi in Shmuel Bet Perek Chet asks, why was David so cruel to the Moabites? Rashi answers, when he brought his family there, it says in Shmuel Aleph, he said, when it's safe, I will send for you. He never sends for them. Right? Why? Because they killed him. Why did he go to Moab of all places? Why not Abraham? Why not from all over? Figure it out. It should be clear.
Because no one was going to.
That's where he's from. His great grandmother's from Moab. He has family there.
Oh.
His second, third cousins, you know. Okay. So you know, right, Bruce. Okay. Why they chose to kill off his family? I don't do I have to justify using something terribly evil? According to Rashi, he cites a Medrash. The king of Ammon saved one sister and gave her refuge. That sister's name, coincidentally, had to be the name of one of his wives, Abigail. He saved one sister. There was another sister who was Yoav's mother, Tsruya. Yoav and Tsruya. Tsruya was David's sister. Was killed there. Has all of his other siblings. And his parents. All killed in Moab. And the king of Ammon, who's the one who saved that one sister. That's the favor that, remember David says, the king of Ammon did me a favor, I'll send a delegation for a state funeral for the king who died. Remember they cut off the beards from the men who went, and they cut off their pants. And, okay. So the text never says what was the favor that the king of Ammon did for David. So Rashi writes there, he saved his sister from the Moabites. Okay. David is in a very bad way right now. He's a fugitive. His wife has been taken away from him. He doesn't have a widow. He's away from his wife. He had a small little part of his life where he had some kind of a, you know, this meteoric rise after fame, after killing Goliath. That didn't last too long. And now he's fugitive, running around with these men who are similarly inclined, hiding from place to place. That takes us to our chapter. Shmuel Aleph, chapter 8. Dies twice in this book. Or he doesn't die twice. He dies here, and we're told about again about it in Perikopas. Shaul is so insanely jealous of David that he takes out thousands of men to chase after David. There are two such stories here in Shmuel Aleph of David being in a position to kill Shaul. Once he cuts off the corner of his garment, and once he takes his canteen and his spear, his private spear. And both times David shows those things to Shaul over a ridge. Right, so that he can say, I could have killed you. If you were running after me, a dead dog, a fly, and nothing. Right? Why are you chasing after me? If it's because you think I want to kill you and take you for your throne, I could have done that just now. Okay, just turn back a few psukim from the beginning of Chafei. Right? It's a pasuk yudches. A short paragraph, it's only 20 few psukim. Pasuk yudches. Vayomer el David. This is Shaul speaking to David after realizing that David could have killed him and chose not to. Okay, so that means you have. It's Yichav Dalet Yudchet, 24:18. Okay, you have that as Yudchet?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's not the Tzitzit. Okay, so in the previous passage, he just says, David, you're more righteous than I am, you're more correct than I am. You have given me Tova instead of the raw that I've given you all this time. Okay? Mm-hmm. Alright? Because you could have killed me and chose not to. Right? So, Shaul is speaking to his internal understanding. He's been turned into a different man. He knows he's a moral person. He says when someone behaves that way, it's God's way that good things will happen to you. And I know that's what's going to happen to you. So he tells him, Chafal, from Ira, please. Talk
in
Ira,
Dati. In Yudalit or
in? In Chafal.
Sorry, Chafal.
No, Ira, Dati, Kimalok, Timo.
Sorry, what was it? Of Chafal?
You know, maybe our texts of Tanakh are one off. You read them in the computer. Sometimes Shmuel Aleph gets off because there are notations. This is a Christian thing of what the psukim are to be based on. A phenomenon that happens quite often in Shmuel is called a piska be'emtza pasuk, where there is a break in the middle of the pasuk, as if though it's starting in the pasuk. So some versions of proclaiming in Shmuel are pasuk off from other versions. Just saying.
Which were in Chafhei?
And Perk Chaf Dalet, I want to be reading pasuk Chaf Aleph.
So Vatachi Neidati.
Neidati, yes.
Okay. So that's so Vatachi Neidati.
Wow, that's a pretty fresh realization now. Right? I know that you will become king. Does that preclude him trying to prevent that from happening still? I know that you will maloch timloch. Right? As Rashi says, Shemarah, Yisha Kodesh Baruch Hu, Matzil from Yehudi. Okay, when did Shmuel tell Shaul, you're losing your kingdom, when he tore his garment, remember? And he said, so has God torn your... So Rashi mentions the Medrash that when someone else gets to tear your garment, that's the one who's going to be king. Who gets to tear a king's garment? Right? The next person who tears your garment, he's the one. So that's when you showed me that you had the garment there, right? So I know that you're going to become king. So he begs him, I'll talk, you show me, will you continue? Well, so what is he asking him to swear?
They won't kill me. Yeah.
Im is like that you won't, is correct way to translate that. If you wanted to translate it literally, it would mean he shovel li b'Hashem, and then you'd have to insert some words in the middle there that say something like, that you will be cursed, a terrible curse, if you would cut off my, you know. That's how early pacts were made, where you included the terrible curse that's supposed to happen into the oath. Okay. In some languages, the word for oath and curse is the same word. Okay. Even in Hebrew, the word Allah, Tihino Allah b'noseinu b'neinu b'necha, Allah can mean a curse. It can, in that passage I just mentioned, it means an oath. Because an oath is a curse if you don't keep it. Right? That's why it's if it's Yishabu li Hashem, it should say Asher lo tachris et zari. You get it? This is actually used in some, let's say, dogmatic archaeological, ancient Near Eastern studies circles to try to prove that the Torah's time frame is at the time of Moshe, not the time of Ezra, is the penchant of the Torah to speak this way when God makes covenants. There's usually a list of curses of something bad that's going to happen if you don't keep it. That was not the way of covenants at the time of Ezra, but it was very much the way of covenants at the time of Moshe. We don't need that with people of faith, but I'm just saying, I'm just pointing it out to you. Okay, that is what's happening here. Im tachris et zari, is that some terrible thing is supposed to happen to you if you cut off my descendants. Now, fast forward to Shmuel Bet. In Perek Tet of Shmuel Bet, David asks, around, are there any descendants of Yonatan that I can do repay my oath? I made a deal. Now he made a deal here with Shaul. Shaul didn't keep his part. It's the deal he made with Yonatan, the back of the arrows I described 15 minutes ago. Clear? So he says, are there any descendants of Yonatan that I can make sure that Shaul's line, basically, is Yonatan's line, Shaul's line, remains. Now, who would Yonatan's children be to David? They would be his nieces and nephews. I was married to his sister, right? So his children are my family, right? Why doesn't David know where his nieces and nephews are? Well, they would be wrong in thinking so, but they may have been hiding. Because when the new king comes along, he usually cut off everybody from the previous king. But David's not going to do that. He didn't do that. But is there anybody else that you can think of, Pekias and Shmuel Bet, who thought that David would want the remnant of Shaul killed off? Two men, remember your name? I'll give you a hint. The names are Rechav and Baana. What did they do? You're correct in terms of the Avalita and Brachas Daftal and saying that Mephibosheth was Ishbosheth. Right? Ishbosheth, he was the king who ruled after David. Right? And two men from Binyamin Dafka killed Ishbosheth, thinking that David would be thrilled and glorified in that, and they brought his head to David, who proceeded quickly to chop them into pieces, it says. As a Kal Vachomer. When the lad in the beginning of Shmuel Bet just bragged and informed me about killing the king, I had him killed. Kal Vachomer, I'm going to kill the two of you for thinking that I'm happy with the death of Shaul's son. So David wants to keep this promise. Later on, Shmuel Bet. He takes care of Mephibosheth. There are two Mephibosheths, by the way, in Shmuel Aleph. Shaul has a son named Mephibosheth, and Yonas has a son named Mephibosheth. Which is the answer to an interesting trivia question. Who has a son and a grandson with the same name, say for Shmuel? The answer is Shaul. He has a son named Mephibosheth, and his son has a son. I'd ask you another question now. Who in Sefer Shmuel has a daughter and a granddaughter with the same name? The Tanakh says, your free meeting will end in 10 minutes. Okay. David had a daughter named Tamar, who was violated by Amnon. Avshalom had a daughter named Tamar, it says. And so David had a daughter Tamar, and his son Avshalom, means he had a granddaughter named Tamar. Got it? Okay. Bye. So, Vayishabat, now, before you look at the last pasuk in this parak, so I'm sure you're David. David, promise me you won't kill off my descendants after you become king. What do you say quickly?
Sure.
Okay, that's what David did say. What would you say?
Why would you think that I would
do such a thing? And how many times do I have to tell you I don't intend to become king? Which would be a lie, but he's been saying that all along. For the first time, David sort of lets loose here. Right? You see it? Shane, would you like to come on? Shabbat David Shaul.
Shabbat David
Shaul, Shaul Okay, David was able to live another day, but he did make this oath to Shaul. That was a slip on David's part. Don't swear that you're not going to kill the king's descendants. He's going to go back home, and at dinner tonight, he's going to listen to his advisors, and will probably, I don't know, if you're from Shevet Binyamin, you don't want David becoming king. Well, at least not now. You want the king to be from your tribe. He's going to take care of you a little more, right? You're going to have the king in your area. Malbim says something really beautiful later in Shmuel Bet. He says, what made David move his kingdom from you, from Hebron, which is in the heart of Yehuda, to Yerushalayim, which is just the northern border. Kings don't make their kingdoms in the border. So if you wanted to say, I have no answer to this, if you wanted to say, well, David knew Yerushalayim was in the holy city from ancient times, and Noach offered the carbon there, Avram offered the carbon there, Yitzchak could have Canaan there. All right, if David knew that, I have no qualms. But the Malbim says something else. This is the Malbim, I'm not saying this. The Malbim says that by bringing his kingdom up to Yerushalayim, David was making some kind of peace with the tribe of the first king. I don't want you to feel left out. I'm the king like Shaul was of all 12 tribes. But I want you to be right in the thick of things. And let the seat of the kingdom be right to Yerushalayim, the southern border of Binyamin, the northern border of Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim just is a city really shared by both. Okay. There seems to be two Yerushalayim in Tanakh. Why do I say this? Because when David killed Goliath, it says he grabbed his head and took it to Yerushalayim with his sword. Yerushalayim wasn't a Jewish city yet. David didn't conquer Yerushalayim until Shmuel Bet Perek Hey from the Yebusi. And they didn't even buy Harabias until the end of Shmuel Bet. At the end of Sefer Shoftim, remember the man with the Pilegish Begiva? They said, where should we spend the night? And the man said, let's go to Yerushalayim. And the other person, another person there, unnamed, says, you can't go to Yerushalayim, there are no Jews there. You won't find lodgings. So why would David take his Goliath's head to a place where there were no Jews? There was an upper Yerushalayim, there was a lower Yerushalayim. One was apparently in Binyamin, one was in Yehuda. It could be that the Yerushalayim that David built up combined the two, maybe. Look, there are two base lechems. Also one in Binyamin and one in Yehuda. That's why in Ruth's story it's based, it says Beis Lechem Yehuda. One, just say Beis Lechem. Should be enough. Because there were two of them. Okay. I'm sorry to tell you, but the one that Rachel is buried in is unequivocally Beis Lechem Binyamin, north of Yerushalayim. Look at the map. Bethlehem is south of Yerushalayim. As far as I'm concerned, Rachel is buried where we say she is. So that's enough. I'm not going to quote all of this. But based on the evidence, Sefer Shmuel itself, remember, we talked about this from the very beginning. Shaul was supposed to go to Kfuras Rachel near Tzaltzach in order to be crowned king. Besides, the Medrash probably heard about the Israel marching past Kibbutz Rachel on their way to Galus. Why would Nebuchadnezzar march them south of Jerusalem so that they could say goodbye to Mount Rachel on their way up north to Babylon? They went into Galus north, not south. Should we still on?
Yeah.
Well, are you cold?
What?
Are you cold? Okay. Are you
close? No, it's okay. No, it's okay. Thank you.
So by David saying, I swear I won't kill your children when I become king, it's sort of a slip up, do you see? So Shaul still ran after him. But that could explain an important element of chapter 25. Because David does go back for some assistance in Israel. Isn't that something he knows he shouldn't be doing? Explain. David in chapter 25 asks for assistance in a city in Israel, in the Carmel, in the north of Israel. Didn't he already learn that? Finish the sentence.
Anybody that tries to help her is going to be killed in the shot.
No, it's going to put the person in profound danger. And when the man refuses to help, why does Doug think that there's a what's the chiddush? Of course he shouldn't help you. You didn't realize that you're responsible for the killing of those 85 families? By the way, David says so. He says so to the surviving child. I think we mentioned this because Chazal are very big on Midah connected Midah. Because there is a story later in Melachim Aleph, Melachim Bet, where a wicked queen named Atalia kills off all of David's descendants except one, who becomes the next king. We just read Haftorah about him. That's Shabbos. Shabbos Shkola. It is Yoash. And the Medrash picks up on this. It says, David, if Eviatar had not survived, your line would have been cut off. You had one survivor because that city had one survivor. His name is Eviatar. The survivor of David's line is Yoash, a one-year-old baby who was hidden for 6 years. When they finally were able to get rid of Atalia, he ruled at 7 years old. So why does David feel now? I mean, is David just being disingenuous? Why does he feel he can go to Nabal to ask for help? Because
it's David's king.
That's Medrash Torah. We'll get to that in a minute. No, but why does he think that he doesn't he realize he's putting him in danger? Isn't this very immoral? No, what does he have in his hand? Let me just read.
He's going to kill him.
No. Why does David feel confident that in this case, it's okay for me to ask for help?
He just made a
spare shot. He just made a show that David, in good faith, feels was made in good faith. And maybe that's naive on his part. But in fact, Nabal of Carmel, or nor... well, it's not novel, but Abigail doesn't come to any harm for helping David here. Shaul has too many bigger fish to fry, but Shaul still does chase after David one more time with thousands of men. This is the story that we just read in Chaf Dalet, where Shaul, when David takes off the corner of his garment, that's the Rashi, the torn garment. The next story is where he takes off the canteen and the spear. Okay. So David feels, I may even have a written contract, I don't know, but people saw him swear to me that he's going to leave me alone. Right? So, okay. So let's read Chafei. I'm sorry, Zahala, Vayam HaShmuel. Vayam HaShmuel,
Vayikatsu,
Kol Yisrael,
Vyas Bedulo, Vyas Kuru,
So that's in the Sinai Desert. So David is going pretty far. That's far from Beit Tova Ramah. Have you ever been to the remote wall? Have you ever been? This is where. I mean, we have Shmuel's Keter. It's just up the road from there. Nebuch, it was a terrible. Those two boys were killed right there. And it's, my daughter lives two stops. If she is. Two high school girls go to school just next stop, the other way. Crazy. So that's you can picture where this area is, right? Right? Midbar Paran is very far from there. Okay. The text does not tell us what was in Midbar Paran for him. There is a community called Paran right near there. In St. Henry. You go upstairs with Golda, right, with 72, and you just get off, you know, Shmuel HaNavi. The street is called Shmuel HaNavi. And it's called, and there's a, it's in, actually it's in Ramat Eshkol. Someone's calling me. Okay, so now, but it's, something is just off here. Midbar Paran is way south, and all of a sudden David is Ishmael Maseb a Carmel. You know what a Carmel is? The Carmel is all way up north. All right, this is too much information. I don't know why I'm being told all this, but it just means that David is really in flux. He's all over the place, and he must probably travels pretty quickly. Okay. He's got a, I don't know, he's driving a car or something. Okay. I'm not going to make a big deal about that. It just means that it's sort of, sometimes the Tanakh tells us like little bits of information, but you have to read between the lines. David is probably back being some kind of a fugitive or something. I don't know. Okay, so it describes this man, Nabal, very wealthy, Gadol Me'od, and his wife, it describes in the next pasuk. Right. It gives us her name. Very rare to hear these names. And the only woman in Tanakh called as well as Yifrat Torah. There's some women called smart in Tanakh, some women called, any woman called pretty. She's the only one called both. Right? I'll tell you, there's a mission in Sanhedrin that says a king is allowed to have 18 wives. If he has 18, he may not have a 19th, even if it's Abigail. Right? What a man like that is doing married to such a prize like this? Right? We start with Pasuk Dalet with Rita, please. Vayishma David Pamibar. Gozeis Tzon in Tanakh. Not a common thing, but in four places in Old Tanakh where someone is Gozeis Tzon, is always a cause for great celebration. Right? It's in the story of Yehuda and Tamar. It's with Avshalom when he kills Amnon. So Gozeis Tzon means that he's probably in a good mood. And he's, maybe this is a good time to ask someone for a favor. Maybe he'll be feeling generous. Okay, so David sends a delegation, not two or three, but 10 people. Okay, and I tell him I'm giving my good greetings. We're going to find out shortly that David has been staying there for some time. David has been around there with 600 men. Now 600 men need to eat. They need provisions. Frequently, they need a beverage too. You know, but David is a good neighbor, we're going to find out. Because when you have a lot of sheep, there are always going to be a lot of sheep rustling. Meaning, people are coming at night to take your sheep. That's why the Torah has a fourfold punishment for that. In order to be a disincentive. In the Old West of America, it's the death penalty for stealing sheep. One sheep, they kill you. If you were caught by the law, the owner of the sheep has the right to shoot you. Nothing will happen to you. Don't steal sheep. Okay. You ever play Settlers of Catan? You know, sheep is a very important thing about settling the place. not just for the food, the milk, but also for the wool. Okay. So David heard that there's a big, big, big thing going on with this guy. All right, so ask him shalom. All right, and he gives him some serious shalom. Right? In my show, we say this pasuk on Motzei Shabbos. Amarti kol echai v'ata shalom v'mischa shalom v'chol asher lecha shalom. That should be your week. Okay. Right? Now look at David. David is saying something between the lines. Meira, look, try to figure out what is David telling him. Telling them between the lines of Pasuk Zion. Can you tell me, you see something what's being said between the lines here? It's sort of like, Chas v'shalom, I don't want to attribute this to like loving his behavior, but it's sort of like when you go to, let's say, like a block of stores in a certain area. This is what the mafia does. They go to each store and they say, you know, this is a pretty bad neighborhood. It would be a real shame if your store would be robbed. We have protection services here to make sure that nothing bad happens to your store. It's just going to cost you $10 a month. And the guy says, no, I'm okay. I have my own protection. That night, the store is broken into. Right? Now, David Chas v'Shalom is not threatening such a thing. But he is saying, you know, while we were here, nothing bad has ever happened to your sheep. What is this, a protection racket? Right? Can you read that in words? He says, I heard that you're shearing your sheep. Oh, it's a good time for you. You know, I ask you, your shepherds have been around our sheep. You have sheep too. And nothing bad has ever happened to any of your shepherds. Be ashamed if that had to change. And you know what? Lo nifkad. Lo nifkad in Tanakh means two different things. Here it means you weren't missing anything. Like, you sound familiar with the end of Bamidbar when Moshe speaks to the men in the Midyan and says, L'nifkad mimenu ish. We didn't lose a single man. Here it means, L'nifkad lahem me'umah. They didn't lose a single sheep while we were watching them. Kol yevehev sabachan. Shalas nerecha. Yegidu lach. Ask your lads. Him tu anrim chen be'inecha ki al yom tov banim. Yom tov. Doesn't mean that it was Sukkot. It means it's a good day. We're not coming here, Chas v'Shalom, to threaten you. Right? To know that not Eis Hashem Tinsayot Chol HaVadachon Bin Chol HaDavid. Right? Give a little something for your servant, your son, David. Who's your daddy? Wow. Ben, calling someone, I'm your son, it's like, that's why I said, who's your daddy? You hear that saying? Right? Now, originally in the song that it appeared in, right? It was a song by the zombies in the 60s. It was meant to be, who's your lover? Okay? Who's your daddy? It's not a song by the animals, love your daddy with all your might. That's not incest. It was this, that's what they, that term of affection. Your daddy means, but it evolved to mean someone who's in charge of you. Right? Who's your daddy? Remember where Martinez? Who's his first name? Martinez, the pitcher of the Red Sox who lost to the Yankees. He said, "They're our daddy. We keep losing to them." All right. Okay, so. By saying, you're my son. Another terminology then was to say, your dog. David wasn't going to grovel that much. Right? He just says, your son, meaning, Naval is such a big shot. Now, maybe the word spread to you that this guy's going to be king one day. Wouldn't you like to get on his good side? So they went to tell all this to Nabal. Zahava, read, read Nabal's response. They are Nabal's
Abdi
Tabi. They are Nabal's Abdi Oh boy. He does express the parent knowledge that Tobit is in a bad way with Shaul, right? Okay, I should give my bread, my water, my slaughtered meat that I slaughtered for my sheep shearers, and I should give it to men I don't know? Right? He doesn't mention anything that would put me in danger if I do that. But that might be implied by Pasuk Yud. Okay? Right? Avodim hamit partzim ish mipnei Adonav. That you have become a parent before your master, Shaul, your father-in-law. I should help you. So the lads went back and told David everything that happened. David's initial reaction, Pasuk Gimel, is, read one more Shana, by David La'anashav.
Which
Pasuk? Remember David La'anashav.
By Omer David La'anashav, we grew each of our bow, we yach grew each of our bow.
There's 600 men there. 400 sign up to fight against. Now that's certainly going to outnumber whatever staff Nabal has. And he's ready to kill. Are you familiar with the Gemara about the seven Neviot? Remember we talked about that once when we talked about Chana. So the Gemara says that Abigail is in that list because of the way she talks to Amir. Okay. It says that Abigail ishes Nabal yigid na'ar echad v'harim v'mor. You know, she somehow a woman like this always finds out, like Rivka, who finds out that Esav wants to kill Yaakov. So she found out David's intentions. Okay. Now, in your sources, I gave you two different places to look. Right? To describe Abigail's attempt to get David to back off. Top of page 5 is what it says here. Perek Nun Gimel Aleph. It's also Perek Yudalid. And look at the important differences between the two of them. I think it might have come up once before when we talked about Abigail. When we did the 7 Neviot, I think I remember being in this room. Is that in the Gemara's source, she says, "Why do you want to kill my husband?" And David says, "It's a daf yudal of Megillah. He's married the Malchus. He deserves to die." And she tells him just at the top of the page, "Lo yatzah to chaba olam adayin. Your teva, meaning your fame, is not spread out in the world. Shaul is still king." In other words, you crowning yourself king now is more your malchus. Someone wants to kill you because he thinks that's what you want to do. Now, did David tell her at that point, "Well, Shmuel crowned me king. What else am I supposed to say?" Yeah, but you're not king yet. At least not the recognized king. David immediately backs off and recognizes her, the truth of what she's saying, and thanks her for saving him. That's the nevuah. She says, if you kill my husband now for this, you'll never become king. Okay. She's right. Israel would never suffer a king for doing something like this. Did they know what he did with Bathsheba? I think not. I think the masses did not know. One person knew. The prophet who rebuked him for it. Maybe Yoav, who was instructed to send him on a suicide mission where he would die. How convenient that he marries his wife right afterwards. This seems to be why Yoav carried so much clout in Israel at this time. He had the goods on David. And he probably told David, if I die a violent death, 20 different people have keys to locked areas that have a copy of the letter you sent me. Messengers tell Abigail that your husband dealt wrongly with these guys. They are good. They are good to us. We gain a lot more from them, from their presence, than whatever they're asking us to give them. Okay. So they tell him, all the lads tell him, you give a lot of something to say so. That you better go and defuse this bomb. Because they're coming to, we're all in danger. Now, in the Medrash Shokher Torah, you know what that is? It's also called Medrash Tehillim. Medrash Shokher Torah version of this, she comes out to tell him, David, Melech, oh Melech, no, David, please, I beg of you. She keeps calling, referring to his Melech, Melech, Melech. Please don't do this to my husband. And he said, but he's more Malchus. And she tells him, which seems to be a sort of a more enlightened view of what Morgan Malchus is, says, that's not Morgan Malchus. Right? You can be king and still be wrong in doing this to my husband. And he backs off. See, what happened, it seems, is that there's an evolution. Midrash Shulchan Torah is a very big midrash. It's hundreds of years after the close of the Talmud. It's a collection of various Gemaras and other before sources expounding Sefer Tehillim. And by putting in, by changing the Gemara's original version of what she felt David's status was, maybe reflecting a more enlightened view, you get it, of what David could have done if he was king. What he couldn't have done, even if he was king. When you give the king such sweeping rights, it's one thing to say a king has the right to, if he feels someone engaged in extremely cruel behavior, even though it doesn't carry the death penalty, he has the right to promulgate some kind of a extra legal penalty in order to prevent such things from happening again. But to say that someone doesn't give you food and therefore you're going to kill their entire household, I'm sorry. Even the king doesn't have that right in Israel. Okay? It's sort of an example of an evolution. It's not two different opinions. It's the same Manda Omar. It's the same story. Okay? So, now, when she goes to meet David, She doesn't speak first, he does. Okay? And he opens up the conversation in Pasuk Chaf Aleph, which I think we're going to leave for Thursday. Thursday, I want to do the following. I want to finish this parak. You're going to see a few examples of euphemisms in this parak. There's one in the very pasuk we're going to start, Pasuk Chaf Bet. A euphemism is where you say one thing. If you're reading it straight, you're going to say, whoa, that shouldn't be that. It should be a different word. Let's just see with the 1 or 2 minutes remaining. What's the euphemism in Pasuk Chaf Bet? It's used very often in the Talmud. Ko Yaseh Elokim V'Chol Yosef is a terminology found only in books written by Shmuel. It appears in Shoftim, Rus, and Sefer Shmuel. It's a lashon of Shvua. It appears in Rus. Remember, Rus says, Ko Yaseh Hashem V'Chol Yosef Ki Amavis Yafrid Beni Uvenecha Uvenayech. Death will separate between me and you. You don't see the euphemism right away in Pasuk Chaf Bet? Actually, we have the same pasuk here. So it's Ko Yaseh. There are two euphemisms in this pasuk. Well, it's mashtin bekir is a euphemism. Look for some translations of it. Some translations will be a dog. Is that what you have there?
Yeah.
A dog. It's not what the words mean. Right? Do you have a tarpon yonis on there? Some English translations read, do you have it on your computer? What does it say there? It's a dog too? What does it say?
It says one who urinates on the wall.
Right, that's a dog. Mashtin is to urinate, right? Oseh sheten. Bekir is against the wall. Now, dog isn't going to kill all your dogs. Could mean I'm not even going to kill even your dogs. Down to your dogs I'm going to kill. No. It means all your... Well, look up unfortunately, it's in the thing. Alright, but the other euphemism is Oyvei David. Ko Yaseh Elokim L'David V'Chol Yosef, you should say. Right? You ever see a Gemara that says, if this thing had happened, every enemy of the Jews would have perished from that city. Really, it means to say every Jew, but you don't want to say that. You don't even want to say it. It's like Altif Tapel Satan, right? So instead of saying Il Malek Kol Yisrael, they say Kol Soni Yisrael. Have you heard that? Malisha Soni Yisrael Sonil Palit. Really, they mean to say Yisrael, but I don't want to say those words. Well, it's euphemism. Right? Oyvei David here is euphemism. Next class, we're going to look at some other euphemisms in Tanakh, but we're going to look because there are others in this parak. Why? Why does it happen? So many euphemisms in this parak. There's not too many in all Tanakh. We're going to say them together in Tanakh. Three in one parak? Two in one pasuk? I have to figure that out. Maybe we'll do a little bit of Megillat Esther on Thursday. Because some of it dovetails with Shmuel, especially Shmuel. Maybe we'll just do it again, okay?